Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. Still under lockdown. Hope you're all well. We've got a special treat for you today. In addition to an awesome jam-packed rundown full of important news and depressing news and dark news and maybe a little bit of funny news, we also have someone joining me today as co-host for the first time ever. Everyone say hello to Viviana Vigil. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me, John. Big fan of the show.
Very glad to have you here. Was very excited for this show. This is your first time on The Damage Report. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
You did a great job. I'm Viviana Vigil. I work as a TV host and a producer, currently working on a really exciting political talk show called Maria. It's on El Rey Network. It's really delving into some current issues with a Latino skew, obviously, looking at it through a Latino lens. Mm-hmm. Really exciting. I have never been able to see concepts like this on television before, talking about defund the police. We're talking about abolish ICE. We're talking about stuff that Latinos do talk about and we don't see on mainstream television. So I was super excited to get into this genre because I come from a long history of entertainment journalism. Mm-hmm. But when you have a reality star for a president, everything collides, right?
It does. And your background previously was in entertainment. I have to say that I don't know if you saw the breaking news about Tandy Newton. When I saw that, I thought, should I try to fit it in? But there just wasn't room, unfortunately.
Sorry, Tandy.
But if you're watching this right now, go take a look at her most recent interview. It is spicy. Anyway, maybe we'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. But today we're going to be talking about the White House's COVID strategy, which looks suspiciously like no strategy at all. We're going to talk a little bit about who got PPP funds and who did not. The most recent ICE effort to kick as many people as possible out of the country. And look at this, good news when it comes to multiple pipelines. So that should be fun. What won't be fun is if we do have time for it, NASCAR and the Confederate flag, Trump is weighing in on that once again. So we might touch on that at the end of the program. If you're currently in the chat, as a couple thousand of you are, please hit the like button if you haven't already, and you can feel free to share the stream, let people know that we're doing this and they can get in here and chat along. If you leave comments and tweets and super chat and all that, we'll be responding to those as we go along. But with that, Viviana, how would you like to jump into it?
Let's do it. We got some good stuff. I mean, there's never a short supply.
No. I never really have to stretch that much to fill a show. But let's do this thing. President Trump understands, at least on a shallow level, that he's really flubbed this coronavirus thing. And so he and his inner circle have come up with a new messaging strategy around coronavirus, and it's really something. His advisors are looking to reframe his coronavirus pandemic response, and they want to, quote, convince Americans that they can live with the virus. You know, except for the many, many, many who don't. But anyway, the White House officials are hoping that Americans will, quote, grow numb to the escalating death toll and learn to accept tens of thousands of new cases a day. Well, the joke is on them, Viviana, because I fear that much of America has already grown numb to the death toll and has come to accept tens of thousands of new cases. We're going to have more on this in just a second, but what do you think about this as a strategy? Just hunker down and don't talk about it and hope that people move on.
I think you are right that everybody has kind of already learned to deal with it. We know that this is going to be a problem, but the strategy is so familiar because I feel like several boyfriends have tried it on me before. Gaslighting. Mm-hmm. It's new and improved. Mm-hmm. And it can kill you, apparently. You know, we do need to live with it. That's why we need masks. That's why we need Dr. Fauci to listen to him. Mm-hmm. This is not something that's going to be dealt with without national leadership. Unless we get to the place where we do lose the 2.2 million people that he said we're going to save. Mm-hmm. Well, it's getting kind of close on the margins there, Trump. Yeah. And, you know, personally, I lost my tia abuela, which is my grandmother's sister, her twin sister, her mother, and her brother to the Spanish flu of 1918. I mean, this decimates families. So the fact that we just have a leader who just, it's fine, it'll go away. Meanwhile, getting tested daily, everyone around him is in some sort of quarantine or blocked. it's really disgusting that we have gone to this far in this country where we blatantly disregard people who cannot afford to protect themselves from this virus. We're talking about our essential workers who are, you know, this is capitalism. This is predatory capitalism on its highest tilt.
Yeah.
Just literally exploit all of these bodies for our own political gain.
It is pretty easy to just say live with it when you are effectively the most protected bubble boy in the universe. Like, that everyone who comes near you is going to be tested. You don't get that benefit. I don't get that benefit. But let me give you a little bit more about the strategy. The goal is to convince Americans that they can live with the virus, that schools should reopen, professional sports should return, a vaccine is likely to arrive by the end of the year, and the economy will continue to improve. There are issues with literally every section of that sentence. The idea that a vaccine is going to come by the end of the year is nice to think about and could happen. More resources are being put into this vaccine than the development of literally any vaccine in human history, but that is no guarantee that it's going to happen. And we know that even in the best of times, it takes years to put together a vaccine. So we'll see. And the idea that the economy will continue to improve, you can cross your fingers and close your eyes and hope that that's going to happen. But if cases start exploding even worse than they already are, and if deaths start to reflect the rise in cases, that is going to have an effect on the economy, whether they want it to or not.
It already is. I mean, we're getting to the end of the eviction moratoriums. We're getting to the end of credit cards waiving their minimum balances. We're getting to the end of, you know, these protections for missed payments, et cetera, for mortgages. Things are going to come to a screeching halt very soon. And we have no way to protect ourselves as a nation. If we think back to how this nation reacted to the polio crisis and the leadership, not just national leadership, global leadership that came together to solve this problem, had we not, who knows where we would be as a society, as a global society. I mean, it was killing people. You know, disfiguring people, doing all kinds of stuff. And we are not taking this seriously.
Yeah. And we're seeing that disfiguring now, that even people who are lucky enough to survive an infection with COVID-19 can have lifelong ramifications from that. They might need lung transplants or transplants of other organs and things like that. I can see people in the chat talking about the fact that in the last 24 hours or so, there is increasing evidence in Texas that the coronavirus is mutating and becoming even more contagious. That doesn't mean also more deadly. It could be a less deadly version. Fingers crossed again. It's nice to just hope that the best is going to happen. And people are talking about how countries that have done a bad job on this, like America, like Brazil, like Bolsonaro is now diagnosed as positive for COVID. Maybe that's what it will take for Trump to take this seriously, is for him.
Hasn't he had it twice now?
I mean, God only knows. We do know that the girlfriend of, you know, one of his kids, not necessarily one of his favorite kids, but the girlfriend of one of his kids has it. Maybe that's close enough to get through, but I don't count on it. And I want to read one more quote from this write-up about their strategy. One senior administration official said Americans will have to, quote, live with the virus being a threat, and goes on to say, quote, they're of the belief that people will get over it. Or if we stop highlighting it, the base will move on and the public will learn to accept 50,000 to 100,000 new cases a day, which is roughly what Dr. Fauci had been saying recently we could hit. It's entirely possible that we're already hitting that. We're just not finding it because we're not doing quite enough testing. In terms of that stop highlighting it, they've been doing their best for literally months at this point to stop highlighting it. But what we're not going to do, hopefully in the media at large, but I can only really speak for the Damage Report of the Young Turks, is we are going to continue to highlight it and not let people forget that this was one of the biggest domestic government failures in the history of the United States.
Huge.
Absolutely huge. So the White House has this new narrative, just live with the coronavirus, if you can. And it's been amazing how fast Fox News has taken that up. Take a look at this from the most important news show in the history of mankind, Fox and Friends. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Is the message from the president from here on in, being that the cases are growing and it's the state's opportunity to get it under control in Texas, Arizona, in Florida, we have to live with this. We have to live with the virus and we have to go on. And is that a change of tactic? Instead of crush the curve, then the curve's going up, but you're not going to shut down the economy again. Is that the theme?
Well, we're not going to shut the economy down again.
Okay, so I mostly cut off Mark Meadows because no one should ever listen to more than a second or two of him. But with Brian Kilmeade right there, you saw he basically just said, oh, we've got this memo from the White House that they want people to just move on. So I will use literally those exact same words and just say, is that what we should be doing? Should we just move on? Should we just live with it? It's a pretty tight circle there between the White House and Fox News.
It's like every New Year's resolution I've ever made. Like, I'm going to, and then I'm like, nah, it's all right.
Yeah. So what I wanted your response there on Mark Meadows. He goes off on a whole bunch of nonsense. But at the beginning there, he did say, we're not going to shut down the economy again. And that I trust him on. I don't trust a lot of what I hear on the news, but I do trust him there that no matter how bad things get, if, you know, God forbid, if the death toll goes back up to 1,000 a day, 2,000 a day, or even worse than the first wave, that the appetite for lockdowns and sort of enforced social distancing, that we might have run out of that. Maybe not everywhere, but in enough states. What do you think about that? Do you think that Texas or Florida or California would lock down again?
I think it would take a lot to lock down the economy again, in regards to closing restaurants, closing all. I mean, they're doing what they can in regards to public eating spaces, because that seems like the biggest issue in how contagious that area is. But they are, you know, if, I don't know if we want to go this far. They're not going to give any more PUA funds to unemployment. They're not going to extend unemployment. They're not, I mean, they don't care. That's where we are right now in this country. They do not care about anybody but their own bottom line. And that means that they're going to plow through this, even if it ruins the economy, because their pockets are going to be okay at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that is very sad. I do think that if the hospitals get overrun, there's going to have to be, and it's going to be states that are going to make special changes to their economy. Mm-hmm. Because national leadership is not going to enforce it. They are not going to shut it down again. They just, it's almost on just the fact that he doesn't want to go back on his word. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump is a moving train. They call it the Trump train for a reason. No rhyme or reason. It just flies down the tracks.
Yeah.
It's like the Snowpiercer.
Exactly. And that, I don't remember that ending well. Yeah. Well, think about it. If the right-wing media has spent months telling people that having to wear a mask, let alone shutting down the economy, is a fundamental trampling of your constitutional rights, and they say it and they say it night after night, week after week, and then it gets really bad, are they going to be like, oh, psych, no, we have to shut down again, and everyone please wear a mask? I mean, thankfully on the masks, we've been giving credit to every Fox host who has switched on that. But the lockdowns, I just don't see it happening. I mean, they fundamentally care far more about the health of the economy than they do the health of any individual American, no matter what the numbers are.
And even though it will ruin the economy, though. It's going to.
It 100% will. And I agree with you that there might be individual states that are willing, or states or cities that are willing to make changes. Like Miami shut down some things, restaurants, I think, and they had shut down gyms again until this morning. I read that they were reversing that. Why? Because people complain, because they've been trained to complain. And the issue with a lack of national leadership is, let's say California shuts down again. What about all the other states that send their people into California? I noticed that we were talking, my wife and I were talking about Las Vegas and how, you know, they've been up and running and all that. And I haven't really noticed an explosion of cases in Nevada. But then I realized, but you wouldn't. Because people would go there, mix, and then go back to literally every corner of the country. You would see it there. You'd see it everywhere. And that's
the only people from Nevada that are on the Strip are the people that work on the Strip, and they're wearing masks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're still more likely to get it, unfortunately. And that's been the story of this entire thing. It's the people who are least prepared to weather this or forced to, but it's going to go everywhere.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
White House has their new strategy. Just live with it. Don't complain. Pretend that, you know, 130,000 plus people haven't already died. Is this a good strategy? I don't think so. But man, do they need one, because Donald Trump's approval rating has been significantly hurt by his lack of interest in the pandemic, his lack of interest in protecting people, his ignorance of the science. Pew Research Center did a poll, and they found that Trump's approval is slipping fastest in the 500 counties where the number of cases have been more than 28 coronavirus deaths per 100,000 people. So I guess this isn't really shocking, but it is good to know that in the places that have been hardest hit by this pandemic, they do make the connection between the suffering they've seen firsthand and the people that have been responsible for that suffering. Let me give you a little bit more information. Pew surveyed voters in late March and the same people again in late June and found 17% of those who approved of the president in March now disapprove. So hey, isn't that progress? Dude presides over deaths that are rapidly approaching World War II battle deaths for America, and 17% are now disappointed in him. That's
good.
Crazy that it's that low, but it's better than nothing, I guess.
But we're starting from his supporters, and his supporters are blindly following him. It doesn't really matter what he does. His supporters are there for a multitude of reasons, and most of which lead to white supremacy. I mean, they are not making rational choices in supporting this man. So it's going to take a lot to pull him away from there. I mean, it's going to take their own family being wiped out from coronavirus and then seeing that link. And they're not, that's not happening just yet, but it will happen when we see these numbers continue to rise. Everybody's going to know somebody that has died. Everybody's going to know somebody that suffered.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I consider myself massively lucky that so far I don't know anyone that has had a significant case yet, let alone died, not personally. But let's talk a little bit about how this change in approval is working. The shift has come equally among Democrats and Republicans, men and women, and college graduates and non-graduates, but those who live in counties with a high number of virus cases were 50% more likely to say they no longer approve of Trump. So I feel the need to cover this because I want people to know that despite what it has seemed like from the beginning of this Trump thing, some people still hypothetically can be reached. It seems crazy that this is what it took, that they were there for that whole ride for years and still liked Trump by March of this year, the whole thing. But some of them can be reached if enough tens of thousands of people die. And the reason that it's important is that if Donald Trump's strategy is to continue to not take this seriously and to do fundamentally even less than we already have to protect people, then it is likely that we will see more people die and it will hurt him even more. It's a terrible strategy, pragmatically.
It's really bad. It's really bad. And it's really sad that it's taking people to suffer and die to change, you know, his constituents' minds as to the job that he's doing. But I never thought I would say this, but I think Trump needs a political strategist even more than he needs a makeup artist at this point, because here was an opportunity for you to lead. Here was an opportunity for you to actually win people over, being the leader that this country needed. And not only did you fumble that ball, but then you continue down this path and not acknowledging your own mistakes. I mean, this is a very flawed, unhappy man inside to not be able to sit back and reflect, you know, and to have self-actualization. Like, he is so far from that. It's upsetting.
Yeah.
The emperor has new clothes.
Yeah. And by the way, I see a comment from Anani Moose who says, talk about how COVID-19 affects black and brown communities far more than other communities. And that's 100% right. And especially important in terms of analyzing this polling data, because the effect has been seen largely equally across political and racial groups. And that is with Republicans having been mostly demographically insulated from the worst of coronavirus so far. And even with that, some of them are seeing how big of a failure this has been. Can you imagine if there wasn't the effect of systemic racism being, you know, transmitted through our public health system and the way that the deaths have been so unequal?
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? It's not just the public health system. It's, you know, the education system. It's the prison system. It's all of these industries that are meant to oppress.
Yeah.
And, you know, black and brown communities are affected not only because they don't have the access to healthcare that other, more privileged groups do. They are in the lower socioeconomic status as well. And that is intentional. Mm-hmm. So it's not just your ethnicity that is making you more susceptible to this virus. It's your economic situation, which is tied into, you know, how this country operates and who it exploits.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising to see that black and brown people, but we're going to also see disproportionately poor people affected by this.
100%. And poor people who have lost tons of jobs, tens of millions, got so little help during the initial rounds of legislation. And even that is going to seem great in comparison to the lack of interest that largely both parties seem to have and doing a renewal of those sorts of supportive funds.
How sad that people are excited about $1,200.
If you even got it.
If you even got it.
If you were lucky enough to get it. While for most working class Americans, government assistance came in the form of a little bit of extra money, maybe $1,200 if you get it, and if you lose your job, there's a chance that you could, for a limited period of time, get a little bit more in unemployment assistance. The government was quite generous when it came to providing assistance to businesses that needed help, and in some cases, very large corporations. And in some cases, the distribution of those funds has seemed a little bit suspicious. Let's talk about a little bit of who got money and who didn't in the PPP funds. The Kushner family, large chains backed by private equity, Wall Street investors, Kanye West, members of Congress, and the law firm that represented President Donald Trump during the Mueller probe were among the thousands of beneficiaries of a COVID-19 relief program aimed at rescuing struggling small businesses and keeping workers employed. This is according to new federal data released Monday. So bear in mind, this is what we've learned in about one day of delving into this.
They're struggling, John.
They're struggling.
It's so hard.
You want an example of the struggle? Let's talk about small business Soho House, the exclusive membership club controlled by
billionaire... Underdogs.
Underdogs, exactly. I wouldn't know. I'm not allowed in.
Same.
They received loans totaling $9 million to $23 million by applying for 7 loans through its locations in a number of different cities. Last month, Soho House raised $100 million from private investors, including billionaire Ron Burkle, that gave the company a valuation of $2 billion, equal to its pre-pandemic valuation. So, is it hypothetically the case that they would have had to lay some people off? Certainly. And if the money went to saving those jobs, good. The business seemed to be on pretty good financial footing, though.
Yeah. I'm going to argue that it's not what it looks like. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, because, you know, Soho House is very strict about who they let in mm-hmm. and what age they are. And the older you are, the more you have to pay. So I think that this was just Donald Trump's way of getting in and getting in the membership so he can go and play with the young kids. No?
Do they really do that with the age?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Can you?
If you're, like, under 25, you have, like, a much smaller... fee. It's like really cheap. They want all the young people there and then all the old cats. So Trump had to pay like 10 times more.
Exactly.
No, it's sick.
That's the $23 million.
I get it. Small businesses. Is Soho House a small business? Isn't it international?
I believe it is.
But...
yeah, it's odd. And it's not just to focus on them.
We're not surprised.
No. What about this? More than 400 country clubs and golf resorts received PPP funding.
Obviously, they didn't even have to apply. It was just automatic.
Yeah. And again, hypothetically, people could have been laid off and could have lost their jobs. That is certainly true. In some of these cases, though, the fact that their businesses received the same valuation mid-pandemic as before implied that they were on okay financial footing to make it through this.
But what also is disgusting about these big businesses is they have already backing. they already have credit. They already are able to get loans. They have that sort of financial support through their institution, relationships with banks. Your smaller independent, you know, mom and pop shop, they don't have those resources. And in my opinion, that's what those small business loans were for. So we knew this would happen. We knew as soon as they did this that they were going to take every opportunity to bleed that piggy bank dry and give it to their friends.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what we live in. We live in a predatory capitalistic society with a culture of individualism. So not only is the government going to oppress us in that way, then the individual populace is going to be like, whoa, it's our job to Horatio Alger our way through this.
And so... Exactly. And here's the thing. It is one thing to identify the people who've received funds that don't seem financially to have necessarily needed it, or that have close connections to the government, whether it's the Trump family, the Kushner family, or people close to Devin Nunes. His winery got money. There's people, I believe, close to Nancy Pelosi. Like, this is on both sides.
Right.
But I'm also more interested in those who didn't get money through this. So let's take a look at a quote from the founder and CEO of advocacy group Small Business Majority, John Ehrensmeyer, who said, "Nationally, a total of more than 21,800 minority-owned small businesses, many with multiple employees, received a loan for under $1,000. To raise eyebrows even more, more than 1,200 of those businesses received less than $100, with some receiving loans as low as $1 American. Underfunding has been a pervasive problem for borrowers since PPP launched." And so when you look at the fact that many didn't get anything, many who did get something got very little, perhaps not even enough to buy a Snapple.
$1,000?
A dollar. I mean, even 1,000 isn't going to save a ton of jobs.
No.
You're right.
It's really disgusting. And I think that's a really important way to look at it about who didn't get the money, John. I like that you did that because... obviously, it's the majority of people that didn't get the money are going to be, you know, the ones that we're not hearing from, because they're the ones closing up shop. We don't even know what's going on with them. And they're going under. Not only are their family, their business is going under, their families are going to suffer. You know, it's upsetting because this was meant to help the country, not help Soho House. I mean, are we going to be okay without Soho House? I think we are. Mm-hmm. I think we'll be fine.
Well, and apparently they would have been fine without us.
Yeah.
But yeah, to give so little money, it makes it seem as if they're giving out the bare minimum necessary to make a number sound good. To say, hey, we funded thousands of minority-owned small businesses. Don't ask for how much, but we funded them. And so when you're giving...
Go ahead.
Just really fast, when you give so much to these businesses that are doing very well... And when you note that as of June 30th, more than $130 billion in funding remained in the PPP tank that could have been given out, the fact that so many of these small businesses that have employees that they have to keep employed received so little or nothing, that is the ultimate insult out of all of this, I think.
It really is. And unfortunately, we're going to see, you mentioned earlier, Pelosi did it. It's on both sides. I mean, in my opinion, they're on the same side. Mm-hmm. When you're on that level, I don't think Pelosi is that far from Trump. Sorry, Pelosi. Mm-hmm. Come at me. I'm ready. Because when you are more about your friends than actually the country, then your loyalty is skewed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard to trust people. It's not surprising that people don't have faith in wearing masks or there's been so many contradicting things have been going on, and we have no steady leadership. You don't have anybody that says, no, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to help you. And that's what these loans were meant to be. It's supposed to be a safeguard, because when you protect your small businesses, you protect your communities. You know, that little Main Street down the street, everybody has a little Main Street. And when that Main Street goes under, you have all kinds of problems. You've got kids getting into trouble. There's nowhere for them to go and hang out. It's really upsetting that we have, you know, small businesses that could have used 10,000.
Yeah.
Hey, 10, 20,000. It's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. Meanwhile, I think you said earlier that the Ayn Rand Institute got money. I mean, isn't that against her philosophy?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds a lot like socialism to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to just look at what's going on and not be angry.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that so much of the focus was on business funding and not on making sure that people can pay rent and all of that.
But even if you took care of the small businesses, you would then in part take care of people paying rent, take care of families, because that's who owns those businesses.
Yeah, and if you gave money directly to people, a lot of that would go back to businesses, and so you would be helping them out too.
Novel idea. I'm voting for you, John. I'm going to write you in.
Thank you. That's a waste of your vote, but feel free. Around the country, more and more people are understanding that the police desperately need to be reformed. And for a lot of people, there's a lot of rage towards the police, and ICE has seen that, and they don't like not being the most hated government agency. And so they've come out with an effort to get you to refocus your rage on them. In a news release Monday, ICE said that students who fall under certain visas may not take a full course load online and remain in the U.S., adding that the U.S. Department of State will not issue visas to students enrolled in schools and or programs that are fully online for the fall semester, nor will U.S. Customs and Border Protection permit these students to enter the U.S. So effectively, if you're one of these international students who had either already been in the U.S. or was planning to come, now that COVID has required many universities, including Harvard and other Ivies, to switch to online course loads, you might be removed from the country as a result of that.
Why? What is the purpose?
I mean, you know, right?
I can't. Yeah, I do know. But I just, when is ICE going to be done? Because I'm over it. Mm-hmm. And it's disgusting. This is disgusting. This is really meant to further the chasm between immigrants and Americans, who are mostly immigrants. It's their method in trying to do what Trump wants to do and really crack down and use any sort of tactic they can to create fear, to prevent people from trying to make a better life for themselves. I'm done with ICE. It needs to be canceled, mm-hmm. abolished, flattened, over, melt it.
Yeah, yeah. AOC was very big on pushing that initially. Yeah, it's totally unnecessary. And I think that we'll have more evidence on this in just a minute. But the Trump administration sees that in a time where people are scared and economically we're not doing well, in terms of public health we're not doing well, and they've done everything they can to turn people's attention away from domestic government failures and instead to China did it. They probably rightly believe that more Americans are going to be okay with targeting immigrants in a number of different ways.
And sadly, they are, actually.
Probably, right. Unfortunately. Now, ICE says that students currently enrolled in the U.S. should consider other measures like transferring to schools with in-person instruction. Super simple.
Because those are allowed right now.
Yeah, just switch colleges.
Just start your own university.
Yeah, or if you're a grad student, just switch graduate programs. Work on your doctorate elsewhere. It's easy. It's easy. And so I wanted to give credit to Miriam Abaya, public policy associate at the Young Center, had a couple of tweets about how ridiculous some of these asks are for international students. She says, what if students are going back to countries without good internet connections, or where the time difference makes it difficult to join classes online? This makes it so difficult for these students to continue to get the education they paid for. And let's focus on pay here. Most international students don't get financial aid. They have to pay the entirety of their tuition up front. I have so many friends who struggle to put together the money to pay for a whole year. She says her husband did. This is just a slap in the face. So they tell all these students with very little time to go, fundamentally change everything about your education, but don't worry, you can just go back home or whatever. And of course, not knowing or not caring that is not easy for many of these students.
I mean, you know, it's a pandemic, so we're going to expect there to be some major shifts, especially, you know, in the university level. And we know that's a hotbed for virus transmission. But this is something different. This is something just meant to, it's like when you see a little open, okay, like now I can really take advantage of this situation. That's what this government is always looking, this administration particularly. But I'll say government because, you know, Obama was on that ICE train too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
We can't forget who really established ICE and, you know, what foundation he laid for it to be further and further for people to be exploited and abused. So it's pretty disgusting because these are all just students who are trying to make a better life for themselves, which isn't that the American dream?
Exactly. Supposed to be. That's what I was raised on. But again, to the point that we were making before about the Trump administration sort of using this pandemic to advance the agenda that it already had. I mean, we've seen that in a number of different areas in terms of the environment and food safety and all of that. We also have this. Last month, the White House issued an immigration proclamation dramatically curtailing legal immigration to the U.S., sending hundreds of people and businesses into a scramble to understand whether their future plans are derailed. In the proclamation, the administration argued that the, quote, extraordinary circumstances posed by coronavirus called for the suspension of employment-based visas. But immigration advocates, industries, and experts say the administration is taking advantages of the pandemic to make sweeping immigration changes and advance its agenda to slash legal immigration. Yeah, the extraordinary circumstances. There might be extraordinary circumstances, but I don't think they give a damn about it. They would do this no matter what the situation was.
Well, and it's happened right after they allowed the DACA students to stay a little bit longer, and now there's this.
Yeah.
Now there's all these requirements and these things because they don't want it. They don't want it. And, you know, this is a real big issue for Americans, and it's a real big issue amongst Latinos as well, because there's a lot of, obviously, Latino immigrants here in the United States, mostly because of proximity to, mm-hmm. you know, with the border right there. So you have a lot of Latino students hate towards Latino immigrants in general as them being people trying to freeload. That's why, and I missed her name, who brought her tweet up, you know, she talks about how these international students pay for them. They don't get financial aid. There's this idea that these students are coming in and taking resources from other students, and they're not. Yep. You know, there's not this shortage of knowledge that you have to be so protective over. But really, this is just another way to keep people away and to create this idea that this administration is cracking down on immigration. And they're not going to give any favors to anybody who's not, you know, natural born American.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't what American is anymore.
And especially, like, think about Trump's doing bad in the polls and all of that. And economically, we're probably not going to be doing well. In terms of public health, we're not going to be doing well. It is only going to get more racist from here on out. I don't know what more bans they can do after the last few years, because so little immigration is still allowed. But if they can find someone trying to get to the U.S., they're going to find a way to stop them, to reassure their base that he still has their back. He still hates all the same people that they do.
You know, it's a real easy solution. If you're really that concerned about undocumented immigration, then crack down on the people hiring people. Do you remember that raid of that chicken farm just before the pandemic? And they got like 600 and some people.
Yeah.
It was a immigration raid. What happened to that chicken farm guy, the owner? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing happened to him. So we're now going to criminalize people who were desperate to go slaughter chickens? That was their lifelong dream? Mm-hmm. No, this guy making millions of dollars, not only exploiting these workers, but also poisoning our bodies with this poison chicken, which I'm sure is not healthy. And he, nothing happens to him. Scot-free. He probably was given a heads up. Hey, we're going to go take your workers. He's probably like, oh, dang.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's always been the case. And
so
yeah,
do you really want to solve it? Yeah. How about all these people that are all anti-immigrant people? How many are hiring undocumented people, paying them underneath the table, not hiring them legally, not paying the taxes? And these are the same people, you know, criticizing immigrants that they're taking advantage of the country when you're the one actually doing it.
Yeah. Last week on the show, we talked about the tragic case of the apparent kidnapping and murder of Vanessa Guillen. There is an update on the story that takes it in an even darker direction. The Army Criminal Investigation Command determined that the remains found last Tuesday near the Leon River in Bell County were those of Guillen, using DNA samples. Major General Scott Elfland said Guillen's family was notified on Sunday. As of right now, you'd know this if you saw our last reporting, but just in case, a suspect in her killing, Aaron Robinson, fled the base and died by suicide early last Wednesday as law enforcement agency tried to make contact with him. A woman described as his girlfriend has been charged and is accused of helping Robinson dispose of the remains. She appeared in court by video yesterday, and when asked whether she understood the charges against her, she replied, "Yeah, sure," and told investigators that Robinson told her that he had killed a female soldier by hitting her on the head with a hammer at Fort Hood on April 22nd. So, I mean, we sort of suspected that this was where this was going, but having the confirmation, I can only imagine for the family, you know, how disheartening that must be.
It's so upsetting. As soon as I heard about her missing, I knew she was dead. Mm-hmm. I knew she was dead because I've dated somebody in the Army. And I know what goes down there. And I knew she was dead. It's really upsetting and horrible. I have to say my condolences to her family and her friends, everyone that knew her. She must have been a strong chick. Her sister was bad. Did you see her going at it? Her sister is powerful. Mm-hmm. This family, they really created they have a real tough character, this family, you know. Yeah. And, you know, this really hit hard with the Latino community because there's a lot of pride in being part of the military for Latino families. And I think it goes back to especially Mexican families, Latinos fighting in every American war that there's ever been. I mean, even on both sides of the Civil War. And it's part of this forced assimilation, right? You want to be American, then you're going to fight for us, right? You're going to be on our team. And that's still happening today. We have undocumented soldiers, you know, fighting for the United States, their country, so that they can get citizenship in return. And then that's not even being given to them. So this is still something that's going on. And, you know, there's a lot of Latino families who feel like they made it. They're really Americans. That you can't tell them that you're not an American when you're fighting, you know, with the uniform on. You're actually, so I'm sure her family was very proud of her to be there. I'm sure she was proud of herself.
Yeah.
And then we think about, you know, the culture of the military, this culture of violence, this culture of toxic masculinity, and what it must be for a woman of color, to enter that world, and how difficult she must have had it and how much she must have fought. So there's so many layers to this, you know. Then we look at, you know, the Me Too movement, obviously, in with that, through this, that lens. You know, this is somebody who was a fellow soldier, and who her family reported she was being harassed, sexually harassed, by this soldier who has allegedly did it,
yeah.
Killed her. You know, how? Why would she want to say anything? Why would she want to report it? You know, legislation, we can create all the laws that we want, but implementation is what counts. And right now, our society, which is one of toxic masculinity, which is one of violence, this is American culture. We promote this military. We promote this, you know, culture of silence within the police community. We promote the culture of silence within the military community. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, especially Army wives and Navy. I mean, they have this real camaraderie.
Yeah.
Are we shocked that she's not reporting this? You know, of course they're going to blame her. Well, she should have said something. We would have helped her. No, you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And she probably did say something, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and we know, I mean, we know, you know, nationally, they don't pay attention to these claims, sexual harassment or sexual assault. Rape is considered just sort of a cost of doing business. It had been used in arguments to not have male-female units was, well, I mean, come on, what's going to happen? I don't know. What are you going to stop from happening? Why don't you? We say we want to support the troops. We say that there's no greater thing you can do for your country than to serve it in the armed forces. But if you're a woman, I mean, you get what you get. It's the military. How could we possibly change it? That's effectively what they say. And this particular base, I'm sure you know, had effectively like a human trafficking ring just a few years ago, forced prostitution for female soldiers. So it's not like this particular base doesn't have its problems. And even after that had been uncovered, apparently not that much reform had actually been put into effect.
This is just a small microcosm of the national crisis we have on violence against women. Sexual violence, physical violence, it's rampant in this culture. It goes back to, it doesn't really matter what legislation we have. It's the implementation. I mentioned dating somebody in the military. He actually physically assaulted me very severely. Somebody else called the cops. The cops show up, asked me in front of him if I wanted to press charges. I didn't even call. I had a black eye. Mm-hmm. And I was so scared. Of course I couldn't say yes. He was right next to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he knows who he is. Mm-hmm. Bad guy. This is the kind of world that people live in this society, where it's okay because, you know, they have PTSD, so they might flip out or they might this. But when you're a true feminist, when you really believe about equality within the genders, then I don't think that men can't control themselves. I think that men can be around whomever they need to be around and still get their job done, because I know a lot of men like that. So I refuse to believe women can't be in the military because they're going to get raped. Can you believe it's going to be, they're going to be naked around people? Well, control yourself. You're a human being.
Exactly.
So there's really no reason for us to have these, you know, rules about who can be in the military, who can't, or that's the cost of doing business. The same thing for LGBTQ people in the military, being harassed, being killed, being, you know, tortured in some ways, you know, emotionally.
Yeah.
It's a real big problem, and it all goes back to the violence of women. I mean, we go back to the rule of thumb. You know that one, right, John? That it was okay to beat your wife as long as it was no thicker than a stick, no thicker than your thumb. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the kind of, this is what our government, this is what our society was based on, that you own your wife, you own women, you own children, they're chattel. And we have to get past that. We got to, and the military is archaic. We know this already. So what is going to solve this? I don't know. I don't have the solution other than, you know, defunding the military. getting rid of all of it, John. I don't know.
I mean, taking reports of sexual harassment and assault in the military seriously would be something.
Vanessa's not even going to get justice. Yeah. They're going to be like, oh, well, it was a consensual relationship, blah, blah, blah. And then let's talk about Cicely Aguilar, his girlfriend, mm-hmm. who, you know, she was a part of this, right? And she seems Looney Tunes. Obviously, she was dating a murderer. But let's not think for one second that she also wasn't being abused by this man. I'm certain if he's over here smashing skulls with hammers, he's beating the heck out of Aguilar, too.
Yeah, that's possible.
So, you know, not that that makes what she did right or, you know, it was okay. She obviously... But she must have been in a real wonky situation to be so afraid of this man or to be wanting to please him so much that she's willing to get rid of a body of a woman. It's just insane.
Yeah, she might have been afraid that once she knew about it, that she could be next.
Or he might have said she might have just been in a panic because he abuses her emotionally or physically. And when you're in that kind of an environment, you don't really know which end is up and you just do what you got to do to survive. Yeah. I don't know what her situation is. I'm glad that she's cooperating at this point. I hope it leads to more information and justice for Vanessa and her family.
Hope so. District court decision with some good news for environmentalists and Native activists who've been fighting against a number of different pipelines. The Dakota Access Pipeline, an oil route from North Dakota to Illinois, must shut down and clear the entirety of its lengths of oil while an environmental review is pending. This decision, which could be subject to appeal, so bear that in mind, is a victory for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other Native American environmental groups, and a significant defeat for President Trump, who has sought to keep the Dakota Access Pipeline alive, and who I will never forget was very vocal while the Standing Rock protests were going on, saying that they should have been brutalized even more than they were being. He was obviously hot to finish that pipeline as fast as possible, but at least for now, there is a sort of stay on it. And we have a statement from the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Mike Faith, who says, "Today is a historic day for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the many people who've supported us in the fight against the pipeline." So, again, it could be appealed. Yes, it could. Yeah, you're right. Let's take a second to say good. But it could be appealed. Or it could happen that the environmental review is done and they decide it has
John,
a small enough...
Hang for a second.
What's that?
They're going to be pumping oil through it again in a few years.
You think? Yeah, it's entirely possible. That's my fear.
I mean, it really depends on the next administration, because the next administration could stop it. Mm-hmm. But we have not seen it. Even Obama was promoting clean coal and fracking. So I don't really know that Biden, if he has even a chance to do anything, would do anything to protect this land.
Yeah, I don't know that he would. Obama was able to be convinced to put holds on a few pipelines for a little bit. And so the oil companies waited and then eventually got it once Trump was in office. Biden does not seem like any sort of warrior against dirty energy. So we'll have to
see. You know
what
irks me about this, though, John?
What's
is
that
the judge cites, you know, environmental protection, you know, violations, and they need to look at the environment for. Never mind that it's disrespecting sacred sovereign land. Never mind that you're violating the Treaty of Laramie. Okay. Tell me that it's a mile off of the border. It's like your little mean bratty brother saying, "I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you." And you're right this close. That's what they're doing. "I'm not touching you. You're there." You know, this is just, why is it that the land is more important than the people? When they decided not to go through Bismarck, they didn't want to disrupt residents and homes. But yet they say they're not going through the reservation when they're at the door.
Yeah, 100%.
And this is a Eurocentric view of what a home is. What is home? It's land. For Native peoples, it's land. So the fact that we're still saying, oh, it's environmental protection, let's talk about what it is. I mean, I know that this government has never respected treaties, but we continue to colonize, abuse, and exploit Native people. Like, I'm surprised there's any left. I mean, I have a smidge of indigenous in me, but even that's been smooshed with your, you know, European mm-hmm. genes and whatnot, being, you know, Mexica. Mm-hmm. So I really hope that this stays, but I don't think it's gonna.
Yeah.
Because they're just gonna do another, the Army Corps of Engineers is gonna do, which they said they already did, right? It was perfect. Mm-hmm. Everything was perfect, to quote Trump. But we'll be back. We'll be visiting this again, sadly. And there'll be oil pumping, sadly, and there'll be sadness on that land again.
Unfortunately, probably. It's been a long story. It goes on. Recent SCOTUS decision upheld a Montana judge's April ruling that the Trump administration violated the Endangered Species Act by issuing a water crossing permit for Keystone XL, a separate pipeline, without mm-hmm. fully assessing the damage the pipeline could inflict on wildlife along its planned route from Alberta, Canada to Nebraska. The ruling means almost all Keystone XL construction is delayed until 2021, which does put it into the next administration. It would be great if Biden would take this sort of thing seriously and would commit to the Green New Deal, which in name he says he does.
Does
we'll
he know
see
what that
about
is?
That. Do you want a reporter to ask him to describe in detail what the Green New Deal is?
Is he taking interviews with reporters?
He's done a few things. He's done a few speeches.
Every morning I wake up and I forget who's running against Trump. Every morning. I'm like, who is it again?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, there could be some miracle and he could, you know, really decide to back the Green New Deal. Is it going to happen?
There's pressure being put in to the effect that we can trying.
This is good. This mm-hmm. is good. And you got to work within, you know, your oppressor's means. You got to play their game to do this. And I, the solidarity from the Standing Rock people and the Sioux people and just, you know, all of Native people that are still standing strong after hundreds of years of genocide.
Yeah.
We don't see that strength anywhere. You know, I just so resilient. It's amazing to me. And I don't think that I could ever be as strong as they are. And I hope I can support them.
I agree.
And our own land and our land, our country. That's so beautiful to have a disgusting oil pipeline going. I mean, it's just bonkers. It's like a cartoon.
I know.
What a giant tube of oil. This will be fine.
And we know, of course, how many times
I've been
massive.
Couch, John.
What's
I don't even eat on my couch. This guy wants, they want to run.
I do, but I get what you're saying. Okay, one more bit of good news. Let's turn to this. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline has been canceled after years of delays, accusations of environmental injustice. So activists had been there you see, I believe this was last year, Al Gore and Reverend Barber went there to talk to activists who were fighting against the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. So that has now been canceled, with the two energy companies that were partnering on it, Dominion Energy and Duke Energy, announcing they were abandoning the joint venture. This was going to be a natural gas pipeline zigzagging about 600 miles through West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. Probably the rich parts of those states, if I had to ask, or if I had to guess. But so this one is actually being canceled. So
that's great news.
I mean, who knows in the long run what's going to happen with some of these, but we do have in a short period of time a little bit of good environmental news when it comes to these. So that's something.
It is something. And I think as the new generation, I have a lot of faith in our youth, and the Green New Deal would definitely change the way we approach this kind of stuff in the future and our sources of energy. So I really am hopeful that if not this next administration, then the one that follows, we will see a lot more progress.
Yeah. Yesterday, Donald Trump, who apparently doesn't get that there's a pandemic on and millions of people have lost their lives, was focusing on Bubba Wallace once again, tweeting about how Bubba Wallace is responsible for some sort of hoax when he wasn't the person who initially talked about the noose. But anyway, he goes on to say that and flag decision has caused lowest ratings ever for NASCAR, saying that because NASCAR is banning the Confederate flag, that's why their ratings are the lowest ever. Now, I put so little stock in what Trump says that I didn't even look to see what their ratings are, and I guarantee that he didn't either. Guarantee right. They're not their lowest
ratings. Although
he either.
Does follow ratings.
He does, but he also lies about them. Yeah.
So
anyway, there he's once again talking about the Confederate flag. Why is he so focused on it? Well, reporters have reached out. He's not necessarily going on record with more about it. But we do have his spokeswoman, Kaylee McEnany, who was asked and said this.
I'm asking you about the Confederate flag. So my question is, why is the president so supportive of flying the Confederate flag?
The president never said that. Again, you're taking his tweet completely out of context.
The president said that NASCAR saw bad ratings because they took down the Confederate flag, banned the Confederate flag. Does he believe NASCAR should fly the Confederate flag? And why don't they fly it here?
The whole point of the tweet was to note the incident, the alleged hate crime, that it in fact was not a hate crime at the very end. The ban on the flag was mentioned in the broader context of the fact that he rejects this notion that somehow NASCAR men and women who go to these sporting events are racist.
So it wasn't just a brief mention. It was the point that he was making was the NASCAR's laughingstock because they're not allowing people to fly the Confederate battle flag anymore. He's definitely focusing on it. She's trying to pretend that he's not. But what do you think about this recent turn, this focus on the Confederate flag?
Well, it's first of all, she looks so uncomfortable when she's lying. And she is definitely, she was Regina George from Mean Girls when she was in high school. Doesn't she look like that type? She's like, first of all, and she knows she's lying through her teeth. And it's embarrassing for any administration to be defending a losing flag that is not of your country. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it. I understand how symbols have power, and there are a lot of, and I hope I don't get hate for this, but I'll take a chance. There's a lot of poor white people mm-hmm. who have really hung on to the ideals of the South and the Confederate, and perhaps it's not for racist reasons, which I find hard to believe. But when symbols get corrupted by evil, like the swastika, it used to be a symbol for abundance within Native American cultures. Well, now the Nazis ruined it, so we can't use it anymore. Guess what? We can't use the Confederate flag anymore. It's over. It's done. It's not surprising to me that Trump is doing this because he really wants to play up to this base that gets fired up about white supremacy. And when you have the Confederate flag, that is the literal flag of white supremacy. So for him to be going up there and asking Wallace for an apology, I mean, the very fact that there was a noose up in a garage period in NASCAR just shows you what kind of environment this guy's dealing with, whether it was intended for him or not, just was left over from the tenant previous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still, who puts a noose in there? What?
Yeah, is it better that it wasn't targeted a person, that it was just,
oh, it was already
I just
there.
Wanted a noose somewhere.
And it's shocking to me that you can, like, they need to fly the Confederate flag, but you can't kneel mm-hmm. to protest. It really doesn't make any sense. And anytime things don't make sense, the answer is white supremacy.
Yeah. And so, look, Trump obviously believes that his only chance in this election is to fire up his white base around racial stuff. But Kaylee has to sort of pretend that it's more nuanced than that, saying things like, the president has made clear he was not taking a position one way or the other.
He has not made that clear.
No, he only said that their ratings are down because they're not flying the flag. He's not saying whether that's a good or a bad thing. Ratings going up or down could be good in either way. but anyway, here's the interesting thing. I really wanted to play this. CNN featured this not too long ago. And it's Trump being asked about the Confederate flag, not this year, but back in 2015. And here is what he had to say it back when he was still running for president.
You're the lone Republican presidential candidate who has yet to weigh in on whether or not you think the Confederate flag should be flying above the State House in South Carolina. Do you think it needs to go?
I think it probably does, and I think they should put it in the museum, let it go, respect whatever it is that you have to respect because it was a point in time, and put it in a museum. But I would take it down, yes.
So there, back in 2015, he said, no, you could have it in a museum. Don't have
moment of clarity.
What's changed in the past 5 years?
He doesn't like, and his base doesn't like, when people are called racists. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, and she even mentioned Julie Smollett. What's his name?
Jussie Smollett.
Jussie Smollett. Now I just call him Juicy, like Dave Chappelle. She even mentioned that. because that's something he gets really mad. He gets mad when you say something is racial and then it turns out that it's not exactly, not that it wasn't racial, because let's be sure, a noose is racial, mm-hmm. racially motivated, but he gets mad when people are wrong a little bit. Oh, you weren't totally right. See, let's just get rid of it. There's no racism. There's no prejudice. There's not. So I think that gets irksome. So maybe this is something we can use in the future. We can just create all these different things that he can get mad about.
Maybe.
Could be fun.
Anyway, look, it's his strategy. Just get hold on to your butts, because there is more explicit racism coming. I mean, the tweeting out of the white power thing, and then, oh, I didn't hear the white power. Like, these are not mistakes, and they're going to become even more common, because he really believes that he just has to turn out 100% of his most hardcore base, and he believes, whether, like, if you're a part of that base, don't get mad at me. I'm not saying you're activated by racism. Your cult leader is saying that you're activated by racism. So take it up with him.
But I want to say this, John, if I could, and I know we're running out of time. Just as something that I'm trying to trademark this phrase, mm-hmm. and it's really to appease all of us in this country. Because here's the provocative statement: you don't have to be white to be a white supremacist. Mm-hmm. And this NASCAR flag situation just proves my point of, we have all been raised, even me, a woman of color, has been raised to be a white supremacist in this country. It's an ideology, meaning that certain things are better, certain things are more beautiful, certain things are right, certain things are wrong. And that's what this is all based in. Mm-hmm. I sent you a picture. I was oddly watching the Muppet movie, and there's Kermit in the back, someone's carrying a Confederate flag. Why? This is how we've been bombarded by these symbols. It gets in there. So when you think American, you think a Confederate flag. I mean, this is where we're at. So we have to actively fight that from within ourselves. We have to unlearn white supremacy. And I'm including myself in that. It's not our fault that we've been, there it is, that we've been pressed. You know, this has been shoved onto us in our society. We have to fight it every single day. You have to question yourself. Am I reacting to being, you know, conditioned by white supremacy?
Yeah.
And I think that that's what this whole Confederate flag is. It's just an example of how every day, through media, through images, all this kind of stuff really trains people of color to think we're less than, trains other people to think they're better.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I appreciate you letting me say that, because that's something that I think really can make a difference if we all start acknowledging that we've been raised the same.
Yeah.
We have to change it.
And I appreciate you saying that. And how would I have stopped you? No, I'm very glad that you point that out. You're 100% right. Unfortunately, that's the time that we have, but I want to thank you for joining us. It's been great to have you on. Where can people see more of either your work or social media or anything like that?
You can check out the show I'm working on right now. It's an incredible talk show on El Rey called Maria. It's hosted by Maria Cardona. She's an incredible woman, so passionate. She's a little bit more centrist than I am, but I love working for her, and it really makes it a dynamic show. I will be appearing on that.
I've heard you're pulling her a little bit to the left.
I mentioned decolonization at least one episode. So I will be appearing on that show in a couple of weeks as well. And you can always catch me on Instagram, @ViviannaVigil_. And please add me. I'd love to have more chats with your fans and your audience. I love your show. I love the audience. I love what you guys are doing. Thank you so much, John. It's so important. And thanks for having me.
Thank you. Although I just remembered one thing. It's great to have you on.
But we got to
2,300 likes, so if you could.
Come on, man.
Everyone just hold for 1 second. We've got a real treat for you.
We got him. We got him.
Oh, my God. That's Frank?
He was dead asleep. Oh, so he's no. Not this is Frank. He's 13.
Frank? He's 13?
A little old. He's gotten Botox, but yeah.
He's got puppy eyes, though. He looks so young.
He's like, I just woke up. Give him my coffee.
Oh, jeez.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on. I'm sure that we'll be talking again with you very soon.
Love it. Congrats on the show. You guys are doing great, kicking butt.
Thank you. Talk to you soon, Vivian.
With as bad of a year as 2020 has been, and with little good news on the horizon, the only thing I have to truly make myself feel better is seeing a billionaire taking down a peg or two. And we've got a great example of it for you today. Joining us on the show is Clip Einstein, pseudo journalist and douche about town. Now, Ken, that's not your real name, but that is what one of the most powerful individuals on the planet called you recently. What is going on?
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to come back from that. Clip Einstein. If the kids in, you know, elementary school had known that one, I don't know if I would have been developed into the person I am.
It would have been, you'd be done. But no, that is what you have been christened by Elon Musk, billionaire, politically connected, his company now valued more than any other car company or Coke or all of these things. So how did we get to the point that you now have this epic feud with the guy that people used to compare to Tony Stark?
Well, I've never reported on him formally, but he has a sort of figure of spiritual significance to a certain kind of Reddit libertarian, let's call him. I've said before that he's like a megachurch pastor for atheists. And it's not primarily the cultural stuff that I have a problem with. It's the ahistorical description of how he came to be who he is, which by and large, and he's fed into this, is this image of a kind of Tony Stark figure that just through his entrepreneurial chops was able to innovate his way into becoming one of the 200 richest people on the planet. If you look at the facts around it, he was born to an extraordinarily wealthy family. The kinds of solutions that he's proffering up that I think give a lot of well-meaning people hope with respect to climate change and things, making electric cars, things like that. If you sort of look at that, I mean, how many people are going to be able to afford an $80,000 car however much it is? These are not systemic solutions. I'm not saying, go ahead, buy your car that's electric, but what we need is really a political solution that a business is not going to be able to offer, which is mass transportation. That's going to really reduce the amount of fossil fuels that are put out into the air.
Yeah.
Not these sort of consumer-based solutions that, frankly, the vast majority of people are not going to be able to afford.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I certainly don't consider myself a libertarian, but I bet if you go back far enough, I probably looked up to him back before we knew much about him. He seemed like, man, like he'll just come up with an idea and then he'll do something about it. We'll have Hyperloop soon or something. And then as the years go by, you realize this is perhaps a bigger mess of a man than any man has ever messed. Like starting fights with like the people trying to save kids trapped in a cave by calling them pedo man and things like that. It just got weirder and weirder and weirder. And I think that the incident with you might be the culmination of that, where you had been tweeting to him and about him, and he took it apparently very personally, right?
Yeah, so I put out a picture, Ghislaine Maxwell, who is said to have been, reportedly the madame of Jeffrey Epstein, who was tasked with, procuring and grooming these underage women to become, frankly, sex trafficking victims. It's what it's reported to be. There was a picture of her posing next to Elon Musk. And so just the day that she was arrested, I thought it was newsworthy to bring up this picture that had already been in the public domain. This is nothing new. I put it out and just said, oh, by the way, did you guys notice this? It'd be interesting to see his response to it. And people started replying to his tweets with it with such a ferocity that you could just scroll through his Twitter and every reply was just that photo again and again and again and again. And it must have gotten to him because he ended up having a very public meltdown about all this, saying that Twitter needs to ban people that are, guilty of bullying and target harassment, which is rich coming from a person like him who's been reported in Bloomberg, targeted a Tesla whistleblower.
Yes.
And according to that report, people hacked his phone. There were people following him around trying to dig up dirt on this individual. And so I just had to laugh when I hear out of the mouth of Elon Musk, the words bully, not to mention the relative power dynamic here. One of the 200 richest people who probably knows everyone in Silicon Valley. And, as much as I'd like to believe I'm the center of the universe, I don't know that I have the amount of power that someone like he has.
Well, so you say that, but you did make a multi-billionaire's brain melt. So you have some power, let's give you that much. And so look, you're totally right about the whistleblower, but also like, he is, whether he is still using your name or not, you are very much on his mind and have been for days. And he's tweeted multiple times over the past 72 hours about, banning accounts and things like that. This is, of course, a guy who's very often talked about how we need to cancel culture, and he doesn't like people being canceled. And you didn't even, like, all you did was bring up a photo that exists. You didn't take it, you didn't post for it. It's real.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't edited. It was already in the public domain. The only difference in terms, I didn't even report it. I just got some people to talk about it. And, you know, you see a news hook, a time and, you know, an opportunity to get people to care about something they might not care about, you know, which in this case is not just the picture. He's acting as though, oh, you know, I saw her one time, big deal. But this is one of several examples of associations between him and Epstein world. So, for example, in the New York Times, Epstein alleged to one of the Times reporters that he had been tasked with picking senior leadership officials for Tesla. Now, I should point out that Musk denies that, but that's not the only association. It was also reported in Business Insider that Musk's brother had been set up with a girlfriend by Jeffrey Epstein.
Wow.
There's another report that Epstein and his entourage, as it was described as, was given a private tour of SpaceX. So this is, if this was just one-off photo, I understand rich people see a lot of people, don't have time to vet everybody. But this is part of a web of associations. Yeah. And that's why I thought it was newsworthy.
And that tour, that is after people knew who Jeffrey Epstein was.
Oh, yeah, that cannot be stressed enough. So this is after not only it was, you know, Epstein had been charged, but he had been convicted and sentenced of, I think it was trafficking minors. And, you know, so billionaires are not ordinary people like you or I. High society, they talk a lot and they worry about optics in a way that, you know, folks like us can't even conceive of. So I find it very hard to believe that he wouldn't have been, that he wasn't either aware or made aware of, you know, what Maxwell and Epstein and that whole world was up to.
Exactly. And so one of the things I find interesting about this is that he really can't stop thinking about this. He's tweeting about this topic. I think you had pointed out in a screenshot at like 6 a.m. He's waking up early to tweet about this. But you made clear on Twitter that like you brought this up, but it's not like you're not trying to do reporting on Elon Musk. But now, because of his overreaction, you might sort of be forced to do some stories, right?
Yeah, there was an avalanche of people reaching out with tips, former Tesla employees, people I'd been friends with. You know, his exes, people described to me, people that he'd been close with being made to sign very extensive and restrictive NDAs. So for example, his ex-wife ended up making a statement after all this that read almost like, you know, she had been put up to it because the language, as several lawyer friends told me, read as though it had been passed through several attorneys. You know, she's trying to downplay his visit to, their visit to, I think it was one of Epstein's homes. Where the picture was, I can't remember what the, there's so many different instances, but so she's trying to downplay these associations. Mm-hmm. And it really ends up making it sound a lot worse, I think. And so I don't really understand why they came up with it, but the language of the statement was very odd. It was like, to the best of my knowledge, I do not know Maxwell. However, I may have been introduced to her. And it just ended up, you know, producing a lot more smoke around this issue that I can't imagine was what he intended to do. But that really, I think, typifies his response to this generally, which is to take something that really me and maybe a few other people notice and blow this up into, frankly, international news story that's been covered all over the world now.
It's like the Barbara Streisand photo thing. It's like, good job managing your PR there. So you've had all these people reach out to you with tips. Are you prepared to drop any scoops on TDR today?
Not anything that I've nailed down. enough yet, because you know, as his interest in me grows, Musk, so too does my anxiety about his legal resources and his litigious nature. So I'll be careful about this, but I think I might have something in the near future.
Okay, well, you know, you're definitely right to be worried because he has political connections, he has money, and he has nothing else to spend his time on. But dealing with not a newborn kid or whatever, just you. So hashtag
on the 4th of July,
Ken Klippenstein.
On the 4th of July, no less. Exactly. There, I mean, there's points where he's tweeting at me, and I'm like, you know, I have to go talk to my family. We're doing a group Skype call. Like, I want to, and it's like, and then it occurs to me, it's like, wait, he has an infant kid. Like, how do I have more family obligations than he does on a national holiday? You know?
Yeah, 100%. Well, we, you know, await with a lot of excitement the reporting that will eventually come of this, but as always, thank you for your fight against the billionaires and for your reporting. And I want to make sure that he gets your name right, Ken Klippenstein. Thank you for joining us.
Good to talk to you, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.